right, so we'll start with announcements. First of all, we sent out a fundraiser letter. Because, raise your hand if you've got it. Looks like you all should have probably got it. All right. Because we're going to hand out fundraiser flyers, and if you've already gotten one in the mail, then you don't need to take one.
Yes, well, you probably all know by now that we're having a fundraiser celebration of Brightway's 10th anniversary on March 24th at the Minimans in Forest Grove. And it's $40. The tickets are $40, but if that price is a little steep for you, if it sounds a little too high, that's just a suggested price. You can pay less, and of course you can pay more. And this is a big deal, 10 years. I mean, this is going to be a good party. Buddhist rock.
Lisa,
our very own Sa'on, will be playing the bass and singing. Can you give us just a little example?
Well, I'm a little scratchy now. I'm going to have a duo with a guitar player from my band, Jason.
Cool.
And you guys are going to love him. He's wonderful. He's very talented. And he sings and writes songs too, so he might sing a few for us as well. I'll be doing some blues and some songs.
Give us a
show right now. No, if you want to hear it, you got to come and sing.
She's really good. I thought she was going to.
Well, and if you're at all curious, I mean, just look her up. She's got CDs out, and you could listen.
Okay, well, I can't twist your.
Nevertheless, she persisted.
I guess not. Okay, well, anyway, it's going to be fun. Please come if you want.
we have some other things coming up. I think next Saturday is a potluck. So next Saturday, the 23rd, noon to 2, is a potluck. Here, bring a vegetarian dish or a dessert or something to share. There's a lot of things coming up on the calendar.
Well, the 2nd of March, we're starting poetry writing.
Okay, yeah.
Here, from 10 o'clock to, I think, noon. We're just going to do Zen poetry, Zen death poems. And David is going to help me, so we're both going to start. But we have like 4 or 5 people already.
All right.
But
so that's also on the calendar.
Yeah.
Yeah, Joe, what day is that coming?
It's what?
It's a Saturday. And then March 3rd, Sunday, if Shoketsu is recovered from her cold, so very soon anyway, she will have her Shuso Hosen ceremony. This will be our first Hosen ceremony, which is the Shuso's graduation, and she does a mando. She will present a verse, and we will ask her questions. Mm-hmm. And we say it's like prodding the loaf of bread to see if it's done, kind of testing her to see if she's done, if she's passed her year of service. And I don't think any Shuso has failed. There's always that
one.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh my God.
It's always a possibility. And then finally, I will just hand these little flyers around for our session, our third annual WEBS session, Y East Brightway Zen collaborative session. And this year, it's going to be in a new place that's more spacious and lovely. Camp Yamhill, out in near Yamhill, Oregon. And this time we get to do it from Tuesday evening through Sunday noon. Well, the last couple of years we've just done Wednesday through Sunday, just kind of getting our feet wet. But we could do it a little longer this time, but you can arrive Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, or Friday. and then stay through the end. So if you can't come to the whole thing, you can come a little later. We did have the dates in the beginning of September for a little bit, briefly, and then we were able to change them. This actually works better. So just make sure you know that it's August 20th through 25th. Go ahead and take one of these if you want. And I will just, you know, if you're, for some reason, you don't want to do session, or you're busy and you can't, or physically you don't feel up to it, then I do not want to imply that your practice, you know, can't be complete. On the other hand, session is one of our really central practices, and my experience is that when people go to session, especially a little bit longer one, at the end they come up and their eyes are wide and they're like, I had no idea. Like,
why didn't you tell me?
I mean, because I think it just impresses on us that this is, how big a deal this is. This is a whole life experience. And even those who find meditation a bit of a struggle much of the time, if you just sit long enough, it's got quantity over quality sometimes. You just sit long enough. You just, you know, your mind can only go over the same old BS so many times. And by the third or fourth day, you know, you might get a little bit of spaciousness that makes you go, you know, and that, frankly, can keep, just a few moments of that can keep you going for years. So I highly recommend putting this on your calendar and trying to make it happen, you know, because a million things can come up between now and then. And every session I've ever attended, right beforehand, I go, I do not have time for this. I'm not going to do this. But then every time I go and I make time for it, it's worthwhile. So, with that, I will.
Oh, Danya?
Yes.
I just wanted to mention lunch after the Dharma talk, we've been meeting over at Market Choice. Today I have a birthday party I have to go to, but I think it was worthwhile just checking with each other if some people want to go. It's a great way to. You can have a more casual conversation, and you can pick whatever food you want. You just go through the cashier, and we've been meeting upstairs, so touch base with Mary, I would suggest, or if you think you want to go.
And I have one quick plug for Thursday practice. I'm starting something called Third Thursday Dharma Talks, and this is a third Thursday, and the Dharma Talk this week will be on Dharma 8. And if you're wondering what that is or what that means, come.
Homage to the Buddha. Homage to the Dharma, homage to the Sangha. I want to thank Domyo for the invitation. It's a delight to see how this place has grown in size and vibrancy. So I'm really appreciating the scheduling flexibility I have now that I'm officially retired. And so it made it possible to come, even though at Dharma Rain they're doing Jukai lay ordination today. So they can do it without me. What a concept. So I've been, since my retirement, I've been playing and reading novels and newspapers. And the thing is, with 40 plus years of practice, all that practice, the quantity, leaves a mark. Even if I'm not the best meditator on the block, it leaves a mark. So even when I'm resting, I'm playing, I'm watching television, mindfulness is present. I'm just aware. I'm aware when my broken ankle aches. I'm aware when I have an emotional reaction. I'm just aware. Because this is central to our practice, is staying with the experience of this very moment, right where you are, right now, in the million times of right now during the day. Awareness of body sensations, awareness of thoughts, and awareness of emotions, feelings. I think it was in December I went to a party with some Zen practitioners, but it was during the government shutdown, and one of the partygoers asked, how do you keep your equanimity when you know what's happening? He was asking with a liberal bias and admitted to watching Rachel Maddow regularly. A couple of years ago, my sister made a comment from a very conservative bias, and I asked her if she got all her news from Fox TV. And she answered, no, Fox was too liberal for her. So whatever position you take on the political issues or family problems or any kind of conflict, it can be really hard to find any equanimity. Back when I had cable TV, I watched TV news pretty regularly. And I used to get annoyed by people affected by a natural disaster saying, why me? So in that circumstance, there is a person on TV not accepting their circumstances. And there am I in my living room not accepting that other person. Noticing that I am not accepting isn't enough to switch me into a state of equanimity, but it is a very important part of moving toward that. All of our shared practice revolves around coming back to this present moment, noticing what is true in this moment, and allowing as much positivity as is real. Don't go trying to create it or plaster positivity over something that you find repugnant. But allowing as much positivity as is real to enter into that noticing. When we are in the midst of our own personal disasters, that positivity will be very small and hard to find, or so basic it is taken for granted. In The Practice of Perfection, Robert Aiken quotes Ihsan Dorsey saying, to have AIDS is to be alive. That's an advanced practitioner. Bringing equanimity to his death sentence. When my liberal friend watches TV commentators talking about news from Washington, D.C., he gets angry and frustrated and despairing. He wants the nightmare to be over and a return to a better time. When my very conservative sister gets news, she gets angry and frustrated. She probably despairs. She wants the nightmare to end. She wants to return to a golden age. When I get annoyed by the person at the scene of a disaster, there is a part of me that thinks, I know. how she should experience her circumstance. Something similar happens when I visit Zen centers in other lineages. There is a part of me that indulges in repugnance because I know how Zen should be practiced. That part of me is arrogance. I confess it. It is my ego clinging to my experience, my thoughts, and my opinions. And that arrogance gets easily aroused. It doesn't get seriously aroused in circumstances where I have no influence and feel no responsibility. On the other hand, it can be a false sense of responsibility that gets us into trouble. I was in constant stages of anger with my father because I couldn't control his obnoxious behavior until I finally realized sometime in my 40s that he wasn't my responsibility. He was the parent, not me. I didn't make him that way. And it's not up to me to fix him. When we are dealing with disagreements with our family, co-workers, neighbors, friends, we have varying degrees of influence, varying degrees of responsibility to these people. Disagreements are usually uncomfortable, and when we want them resolved, but when we think we know what the solution is, we stop listening. We take a position that is actually trying to stand above the others who don't agree with us. And when those others fail to bow to our great wisdom and our authority, we run the risk of anger, rage, frustration. And if nothing changes, after a while, the fire of the anger dissipates, and we may be left with despair. Parents of teenagers often experience that slide into despair, as increasingly they discover that although they carry so much responsibility, they don't have control. It takes humility to step off the high horse of authority. But doing that makes it possible to discover how much influence is still there. Anger over politics is similar. I know some people who don't vote because their vote doesn't count. That is to say, it doesn't control the outcome. The truth is, no one has control. No one has all the answers. And the hard part is, everyone carries some responsibility. When we're very certain, when we think we know what direction to take, it's tempting to only listen for things that bolster our position. We can slip into wishing for control so that we can fix everything. But the cure, the fix, is just an illusion. In raising teenagers, in driving a car, in national politics, or in practicing Zen, nothing is permanent. So the idea of control is just fostering illusion. Control is elusive, like a fog. Coming back to this present moment, bringing awareness to body sensations, thoughts, and feelings, all by itself, this is returning to humility. When we try to exert control, we are assuming the posture of a god. And it's a position we are not well equipped for. Returning to the limitations of this body, this mind, this heart, returns us to our real life, our human life. This humble reality is where we have real possibilities. Real responsibilities, but also real opportunities for influence. I hope you all are finding satisfaction and joy in this simple humanness. That's my short little talk for today. Are there questions or comments or complaints?
What brought you to Buddhism?
Suffering. In particular, despair, actually. Clinically depressed. And the cures that were available to me just only got me so far. And it just, but when I got past the idea that sitting and facing a wall was stupid, I started to discover things that got closer to the root of my despair. And once I started to discover that, they couldn't keep me away.
What period of time was that? Do you remember? Was there like an aha moment?
There was a series of aha moments from about 1971 to 74, and 75, I took ordination. Yeah.
Is equanimity always the preferred response in any situation?
I would love to say absolutely yes, but I think the real thing that we need to do is respond as best we can in our circumstances and not judge ourselves or others for a failure to reach equanimity when the tornado has just taken away everything. You do the best you can. Yeah.
When you're reflecting on where to direct your energy and action, when it seems like there's so many different things on fire in the world, it kind of such a broad range of places where you could try to put your energy. Do you have words for how you do that discernment?
This may sound unhelpful, but I like to look at where my energy or attention or my money can do the most to change the situation. I can't conjure up enough money, energy, and brilliance to solve the problem of world hunger. I just can't. But I can donate socks to people who help the homeless. And, you know, that helps relieve suffering. Socks are a good thing. So I know that I can't stop the bickering in Congress, but I know that there are ways that I can influence the political landscape, and I'll use those. But I won't let it drag me down into the ground. I'll do what I can and go back to playing a video game. Yeah.
When mindfulness is being mindful of just how much you wish things were different.
Sure.
How do you keep it from just turning on itself and feeding on itself and spiraling into, you know, an explosion of frustration?
How long have you been practicing?
5 years.
Yeah. It makes a difference. The practice that you do on the cushion, when you allow a thought to arise and dissipate, you are teaching your body, your mind, your heart, that it is possible for these things to arise, have their moment, and dissipate. And the more you know that these things can come, have their moment, and dissipate, the more you can take that frustration, that anger, that fear, that confusion, whatever it is that is driving you crazy, you can allow it to have its moment of arising and then know, aha, I'm going to wait, and this is going to dissipate. And then I don't invite it to repeat. Because that's where Shintai taught me a wonderful word years and years ago that I treasure, which is perseverate. Taking that thought and allowing it to come up, and then allowing it to come up, and allowing it to come up, and regenerating over and over again, and we get stuck in a rut of perseverating on world hunger, Washington, D.C., City Hall, my neighbor who's so noisy, da-da-da-da-da-da. Or I can allow myself to get irritated, notice that I'm irritated, notice that there is a time for being irritated, and there is a time for going back to my novel.
Thank you.
Practice. Doesn't make perfect. It just makes it better.
I think you use the phrase, allow to dissipate.
Yeah.
Could you tell me more about what that's like for you?
Details?
Details.
It was a wonderful little snippet. I actually made a couple Xerox copies and handed them to some people. It was in the New York Times Magazine, which is a wonderful compilation of things. It was just a little snippet about how to deal with anger. And it came down to mindfulness. You notice what it is that you're feeling. You stop pointing your mind at the thing that is the subject of your irritation. And you start pointing it at the physical sensation, the mental sensation, the emotional sensation. What is it that is going on right here, right now? Not what is going on the other side of the country. Not what is happening on the television. But what is happening right here? Okay. I'm hot. My eyes are burning. My heart is beating fast. My stomach is in turmoil. I'm clenching my fists. Okay. Part of releasing that is it possible to unclench my fist? Is it possible to slow my breathing down? Is it possible that I can notice something that is more positive than the thing I am focusing on that just makes me so darn mad? Coming back to that, it's possible to allow it to dissipate. And when it has dissipated, you have a lot more opportunity to do something about that which is making you mad. I've been reading some, I still read print newspaper. And the Oregonian has, you know, stories of local people who have had brushes with the law, and some of them are quite serious, and some of them are just downright funny. Because people get into a cycle of perpetuating their own misery, and it's just obvious in the report of what they have done and continue to do. We don't have to be like that. Don't have to be a joke. You were going to say.
So, if I have this right, allowing it to dissipate is not necessarily a passive practice.
No, it's actually, it helps to pay a little attention. When you get better at it, it can be pretty easy so that it feels more passive. Mm-hmm. But especially while you're learning to do it, it really pays to pay attention. As I said, after practicing since the early 70s, which is before some of you were born, the practice is in me. So even if I'm doing something totally mindless, there is a part of my mind that is paying attention. Does that help?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Thank you.
I had a pretty deep practice for many years at Dawn Rain.
Yep.
And even though my practice is a lot more sporadic lately,
uh-huh.
It seems like there's this field of equanimity,
uh-huh.
That's kind of always there, and even when anger or grief, like my parrot died, very sad, but these emotions arise within that field.
Sure.
And, at times when I lose it is when it's almost like it arises within the field and kind of tears it.
Mm.
makes any sense. But for the most part, that field is still there and those negative emotions can still arise. And I feel okay, I guess.
One of the tenets, dogmas, bits of dharma that we are given, that we've inherited, that I truly believe, is that the equanimity was always there. It's not something that Zen gave you. Zen gave you some of the tools for you to discover that you're always in that great field, that big empty field. And sometimes, you know, you get bitten by a horsefly and you get angry or hurt or scared or something, and the equanimity seems to disappear because all your focus is on that bite. But the equanimity never goes away.
The cloud in front of the sun.
Exactly.
Talk about allowing to dissipate, like anger allowing to dissipate.
Mm-hmm.
What's the difference between allowing to dissipate and aversion to anger? Allowing anger to dissipate versus being averse to anger and wanting it to go.
Averse to anger is one of those dogs chasing its own tail. The difference is acceptance. So if you notice that you are angry and just accept the fact that, yeah, I'm angry, the allowing to dissipate that I was just talking about means changing the focus from the subject, the text of what my anger is telling me, and noticing what that experience is for me, and coming back to that. So if you are layering on top of that an aversion to anger, then you put your attention on, oh, I am also feeling this aversion to anger, but that's more text. Mm-hmm. So you need to get back to, here I am, sitting in this chair, feeling this and that and the other thing, and seeing if I have any room for movement in that. And just looking for the room for movement. And another thing I would add on top of that is that I said about bringing in whatever positivity is real. One of the things I encourage people to do is give yourself a pat on the back every time you notice. If you just notice, oh, I am noticing that I am angry. Well, good on me. That little bit can be the pivot point where you start making a change in how much that anger controls you.
You ultimately want the anger to go away, though, in either case.
Because it is poisonous. There are things that are toxic to us. And I mean that both in the figurative sense, but also literally. Being in a state of anger for any length of time starts doing damage to your internal organs. So, yes, it is healthier not to linger there. I'm not saying you're ever going to get to a state where it doesn't arise, short of brain dead. But lingering there is toxic. So, yeah.
That equanimity
what kind of a slippery slope to me sometimes. Is it possible to get to the point where you just don't care?
Of course. It's called a Zen disease. Yeah. And one reason for having your teacher is I hope I taught her to use a good sturdy boot to give you a kick if you land in that state.
Okay. Well, why not for the boot?
Any more? Are you hungry for your lunch? Yeah.
Thank you so much for this. I needed this. I needed to hear this.
Okay. And,
I was looking forward to you being here. I think I was at my best receptive. I really appreciate it.
Well, I was very happy to be asked.
And come back.
Do you have an ending?
No, we don't usually, but if you okay. have one, we're happy to.
Oh, you know, I'm at an advanced age. I can't pull it up at a moment's notice.
So we should just go, all right?
Yep, okay.
Thank you.
Enjoy your day.